Hello, and welcome to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. Welcome all to the Mornings with Joel CRE Podcast. We're excited today. We have a special guest that's actually in the studio that is a little bit different from our normal commercial real estate platform, and that is Ted Jenkins. And we also have Malik Lee, who is joining us as well. And if I can get my tongue out from being stuck to the top of my mouth, we'll be good. But we're excited to be here. And as always, we're focused on real estate and everything else. But as you know, making money in real estate is an industry where you can make a lot real fast, you can lose a lot real fast. And if you're not smart in your decision making, you can actually wind up losing your shirt. We've seen a lot of people lose that on their first deals and everything else. So we want to be smart about how we do it. And as a result, we invited Ted in to have this conversation. And the beautiful thing about it is that, Ted, everybody likes to compartmentalize everybody and kind of put you on a shelf and say, well, you're a financial planner or you're a real estate guy, or, you know, like you can't do anything else. But you and your business is something far beyond just, you know, the typical financial planner. So if you don't mind, give us a little quick introduction and tell us a little bit about who you are, and then we'll talk about how you got to where you are.
Yeah, I don't know if I know who I am anymore, but I'll say this, that I spent the last almost 16 years of my life here in Atlanta building out a financial services firm called Oxygen Financial, focused in on the X and Y generation, really trying to train people and educate them how to get smarter as the CEO of their family finances. And then we built this to a $2 billion firm. And now I'm involved with projects, including my friend Malik and other things that we're trying to help other people figure out how to climb the ladder and make some social impact, and at the same time, make a financial impact in people's lives.
Yeah. Well, quite interesting. Now, you mentioned about a $2 billion business, which obviously is no small feat. So congratulations on that. I'm certainly excited about it. But, you know, for a minute there, when I first heard this, and obviously we talked a little bit before this call, I thought you had fallen and bumped your head because you told me that you quit your high-paying job during the recession. And it's like, why would you do that to start a business? So what's the story behind all of that?
Well, I think that we aren't taught when we go through school about how real wealth is made in America. And in the end, and you know this being in real estate, that there's really two core components to me about how you build wealth. One is you own real estate. Land isn't going anywhere, so you got to own some of it. You got to own some dirt. You got to own some property. And two is you build businesses. And I realized working for a big corporation that it was a great job, but it was also like getting drugs from a crack dealer. You know, I get that paycheck every 2 weeks, and it felt good, and it went into my bank account. But I was really spending my time helping somebody else build their equity and their business, even though it was a Fortune 500 company. I wasn't really building mine, and it was really hard. I was making $1 million a year, but I finally realized in order to build real wealth, not this fake crack, as I say it, I had to quit that job. And sometimes we have to do that, quit things we're doing to try to get further ahead. So it was really hard, but that's why I did it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that speaks a lot to the courage that actually you had to have behind you in order to do that. How did you actually prepare yourself to make that kind of jump in a crazy environment that was going on back then? And obviously people are fearful that we're going into that again. I don't necessarily think we are, but what type of situation did you structure yourself? Did you have savings? I mean, how did you just do that? Obviously you didn't just walk in one day and just jump out the window.
Well, I think like most business owners, I didn't anticipate how long the runway would be for me to take off and try to get my income even remotely close to where it was before. But I had to prepare on two sides of the aisle. One is at home. Thank God it didn't get me divorced. But, you know, I had to go home and tell my wife and that, you know, I was going to go from making a lot to making zero. In fact, actually paying money to start to figure out how to earn money again. And that was a tough concept for her to understand because we had three kids. that was one conversation. And then two, yeah, I took my personal savings from all the time that I had saved being a senior VP at American Express and Ameriprise. And I used my personal savings. It took me about $500,000 of my own money to put into the company to get this thing up and off the ground. And it's hard watching your own cash burn in front of you, especially in that first 6 months or a year where I'm like, well, it'll only take me 6 months to start getting this amount of money. And then that takes 9 months, and then that takes 12 months. And then everything is longer, mm-hmm. longer than you think. Even if you measure twice and cut once, it's still longer than you think.
Yeah. Good point. So you mentioned the reference of Amex and Ameriprise. How is Oxygen Financial different than a firm like that? Because again, we talk about why you're not just your financial planner. You're so much more, and your company is so much more.
So most of the big companies can call themselves whatever they want, but really they're in the business of two things. Number one, whatever they say, they're in the business of manufacturing products. Now, they may call those products whatever they want. If you go to Costco, Costco sells Kirkland brand, but if you didn't know it was the Home Team's brand, you wouldn't know that you were buying Costco brand. And right. all of the big companies today, the banks, the wirehouses, they're all in the business of manufacturing because that's where the real money is made. So we wanted a company where we could act, and Malik will appreciate this, as a pure fiduciary, where we don't make any products, we don't take any kickback money, we don't get some guy or gal to pay us to do a dinner seminar at a restaurant. And so this way we could act 100% in the best interest of our clients. Number two, most of those big companies are only concerned about managing wealth and getting that wealth under management, and generally people that have $1 million or more. We focused on the sub 1 million market, people that had less money and needed help with things like getting out of credit card debt and budgeting and building up their family finances. And the truth is, even today, most of these big firms, they turn their nose up at those people. They don't want to work with them. They don't care. They say, well, we care about clients. Yeah, well, only the ones that have money. And we wanted to make an impact in the industry and an impact here in Atlanta. And the only way you do that is you got to help people figure out how to get up the ladder.
Yeah. Well, very, very powerful statement. And I'm sure we're familiar with all those commercials where if you have $500,000 in investable assets, then you could give us a phone call, right? Yeah. So obviously you've done things a little bit different. How successful has that been? Because I understand you have a pretty decent retention rate.
It's been unbelievable. Yeah, we're at a 99% plus retention rate on clients. You know, we actually built the model with like a Netflix subscription type model. So people don't have to invest their money with us at all. They could purely hire us for a monthly fee to give them advice, or they could have us help them with their assets as well. You know, that's entirely up to them, but it's been very successful. The average age of our client is 49 right now. So Gen X and Gen Y have gotten a little bit older, mm-hmm. but we still don't have minimums in the firm. If someone had $5,000, we would figure out a way how to work with them. And still today, any big wealth management company, any big bank or brokerage house, they don't want to know your name unless you get a certain amount of money.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. The changing of the model is totally different. If you think back to the early tech days, nobody would even dream of giving you a product without charging you for that on a monthly basis. And then Google said, we'll give you the world's information for free. It was like, what? You know, but look at the end result of it. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways that kind of plays to what you guys have been able to do in coming from, you know, working with the smaller people that most people just throw away in the trash and being able to build them up. So that's quite remarkable. And Malik, I didn't get a chance to speak to you yet, but I kind of want to tie this into the conversation because from what Ted was saying, you guys have a venture that actually is going to help these individuals even more that are not necessarily $1 million in investable assets and above. So before we go down that road, Malik, if you don't mind, introduce yourself, tell us who you are and why we asked you to be here today. And Ted wants you in this arrangement with him.
No. Excellent. So once again, Malik Lee, I've been in the financial services industry now for about 20 years, 16 of those years in financial planning. From there, I worked at all your major wirehouses and brokerage firms and even independent RIAs, where one of the firms I worked at also managed about $2.5 billion. And on that, I managed a team of about five or six people, and we managed about 180 million of that $2.5 billion. So my expertise runs deep in the financial planning space from that side. Where Ted and I kind of really, really met was a lot of the work that I do in the industry. I am the past chairman for the Financial Planning Association of Georgia, where I was over 500 advisors, helping them grow their practices, build their practices, and lead them in that aspect. I am also the past chairman for the Council of Examinations for the CFP board. So for you to get your certified financial planner, you had to come through me and my crew of 10 folks who was building out that exam and things of that nature, and making sure we put good sound people in front of the masses, if you will. So through my matriculation through the business, I then went out and started my own company, Felton & Peel Wealth Management, that you see behind me that I've had now for about 5 years now. And one of my goals when starting this company was to be able to address what Ted actually mentioned, right? Is how can we help more people that's under that $1 million, that $500,000 mark? How can we do that? So that was my goal when I started this firm. I started out to attack those individuals, and we did a great job at it, and we were doing it very well. But one thing that I didn't have that Ted's firm had was the ability to kind of scale quickly or bring in more folks should you need it and things of that nature. So as I was growing the firm, I realized that if I want to provide them high quality, individualized attention and specialized attention, I need better technology to do so. And hence where the introduction of Klondike Financial came about, and then Ted and I kind of now are building that out, and the team are building that out so that we can kind of answer those questions.
Joel, I want to add in here. I want to talk about two important things today. You're going to get excited about this because we're doing one in real estate, which we can talk about, which is very interesting. But what Malik knows and I know is that we've got a real problem in America, right? And it's called access. And the way that you build wealth over time in part is that you have to get access. That's why people that have a lot of money make more money, because they get access to things that people that don't have the money
can't get access to.
Yeah, they can't have access to it. So part of it is because our education system is not set up to give people a real financial literacy education over time. We needed a way to develop a software platform where we could give people, especially those that struggle with having upward mobility or they can't figure out how to increase their finances, to get access to people like Malik and me as certified financial planners, but at a cost affordable price. And what Klondike is going to revolutionize, we believe in our industry, is saying, can I get access to a financial advisor for 10 bucks a month? Mm. And we're on the path right now where we've got software in place, and we're developing out our team to be able to give access to anybody and everybody out there, to not get a commission sales guy to sell you an insurance policy, to not get some advisor to browbeat you to move your money over, but to be able to get access to somebody that you can ask questions to, but at a cost affordable price, so we can help scale upward mobility, not only of Atlantans, but people around the country.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's really, really powerful. Malik, you had anything to add to that?
No, that's it. And I was saving the real PowerPoints with the pricing that our goal that we're trying to set. And Ted drove it home. I mean, that's it. That's awesome.
All right, fantastic. So now there's a technology component to this that I believe will operate in a mobile environment. So what's that all about? How does that work?
So the base will be mobile. We also want to have a web-based functionality as well, too, because if we want to kind of attack that older baby boomer range and things of that nature, we probably need to be a little bit more flexible. So that's the goal too. But our course, our base individuals will be the app. And then within that app, it's going to have an aggregator where we're going to be looking at all of your accounts, all of your assets, keeping track of that, keeping track of your net worth. I always have to tell people, and I tell my current clients, that your net worth is like your financial blood pressure, right? You walk into the doctor's office, they're going to tell you, hey, what is your temperature? What's your blood pressure? Let me see how well you've been taking care of your body. Let's see how stressed you are. They're going to know everything right then and there. Well, that net worth in finances does the same thing. It lets us know how well you've been taking care of your finances. If you're trending upward, if you're trending downward, like it gives us a lot right there. And especially if we can track it. So that's one of the features that we're going to have. We're also going to have a budgeting feature, a budgeting feature of it. Now I say budgeting because that's the term that everybody knows, but we can't stand budgets at Klondike, right? We like spending plans, right? So we want to look at your income. We want to look at high key areas such as in retirement, investments, those big bracket areas, housing, rent. We want to take those areas and start working your way down. And then so you're incentivized now to that, hey, we take out those fixed items. So now we have this flexible side of it. So that's the part that we have to control. But these fixed items here are going to stay there. We're looking at investments, right? We want to make sure that clients are seeing what their benchmarks is, seeing how well that they're doing. One of the things when I sit down with clients, I let them know how the S&P 500 did last year. I let them know you'd be very surprised how many people are just now finding out with the bank fiasco that we're having that 30-year treasuries did absolutely horrible last year. Mm-hmm. And it did worse than the stock market, right? But most people don't know that. They don't know those benchmarks, those indices. They don't know how well they're doing. And then now you have those folks who are 10 years out of retirement, 15 years out of retirement, thinking that they're taking the safe route and doing 30-year treasuries when they lost 25-30%. Right. So no, giving them that data, that information to what Ted has talked about, you know, information is power. And then Klondike is going to be a wealth of information with your finances from that standpoint.
Gotcha. Ted, you had something you were about to add to that?
Well, I mean, look, you know, we're trying to address a number of issues in here. Mm-hmm. But when you look specifically at our city here in Atlanta, where we were the lowest of all the major cities in upward mobility, we were at 4.5%. And we still have a huge inequality gap, not only in income, but in wealth, especially amongst people of color, Black people in our city and here right now. A lot of this gets down to access and education, right? And, mm-hmm. and you know, unless there's some major transference of money, we have to be able to get these tools into the hands, not only of adults, Joel, but getting into places like Babb Middle School and going to Forest Park and going to these schools and get kids that are 13, 15 years old, get them on the app, get them used to, we're not going to charge them anything, but getting them used to understanding how do I track my money? What does it mean to me? Because without educating the kids when they're young, you can be an adult and be 25 years old, but it could be too late by then. Like you're going to learn late. We think we can make a huge difference in our city here and close that gap because there are other cities where it's a lot better, like Washington, D.C. And we just have to fix that here. And I think Malik and I we're on a social impact mission to do that. But we're also capitalists and we think we can do both at the same time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very, very good point. You know, one thing I do want to talk about, and I'm not going to mention any names, but there is a rather large organization that I had this discussion with up at the Capitol in the Treasury building a couple of years ago. It was kind of interesting because the whole mindset was that they would just kind of hand people a worksheet or a flyer or take a 1-hour class and then think that is going to change the whole trajectory of a person's life. And it doesn't happen that way.
No.
You know, so how does this change habits? Because the habits and the way people spend money has to be affected in order for them to see change.
So, Joel, let me answer because I'm working on two projects. One is Klondike, and the other is I'm on a board of a company here in Atlanta called Roots, R-O-O-T-S. And I'll talk about Roots, then I'll let Malik talk about the Klondike side. Mm-hmm. What Roots is involved in is that we basically want to teach people how to live in an apartment like they own it as a real estate model, Joel. So what we've been doing is we've been buying lower to middle income housing. And typically when somebody who doesn't have the financial means rents, you can pretty be sure that somebody's going to steal their security deposit. They're never going to get it back.
Yeah.
We are taking the alternative model and we're saying, listen, we need to teach you how to live as a renter like you own the property. So as opposed to taking your security deposit, what we're going to do is pay you dividends, if you will, into your security deposit, the better you maintain the property. So we ask you three things. Number one, pay on time. Number two, be a decent neighbor. Number three, once a quarter, I want you to basically take a video of the property so we can help fix it before we have real problems in the property. Mm-hmm. And we're going to put that money into your account. So by the time that you leave being a renter, hopefully we've helped you build up your security deposit to the point that you can afford a down payment on a house. We have 31 properties right now. It's basically $20 million roughly, or $10 million in the fund, but about $20 million of real estate. And on the other side, Joel, what we did is we made this a Reg A non-accredited investor product, meaning that any Atlantan that's out there could put $100 a month into it. And they would basically be in a REIT on the other side of it, helping, you know, do two good things, right? Have social impact, help more people understand how not to get ripped off on their rent, which most landlords do, help them grow the value of their money, and then one day own a property. And I'm on a mission, both with Klondike and this, to try to help change what's happening here financially here in Atlanta. So that's how we're doing it on the root side. To really teach somebody how to do it, you got to teach a renter to be acting like they're owning. The only way you do that is you don't steal their money. You put dividends in. So they're basically like a property owner for you.
Yeah. Wow. That's an incredible model. I've not heard of anything like that before, but it's an excellent, excellent idea that can certainly is scalable. I mean, you've already proven that it's scalable. So that's phenomenal. I'm excited to hear about that. And we certainly would like to hear more. You know, the biggest thing is that, again, as you mentioned, it changes the habits, because if you're living in the property month to month and you're maintaining it like you're an owner and you're thinking, hey, I'm going to get this money back that's growing every month so that I can actually move into another property. I mean, it's a great model, man. That's fantastic.
Joe, we haven't done this in America yet. I haven't seen it yet in the real estate side. But like, you know, look, college kids beat up on those apartment complexes like no other, right? Yeah. They spill beer, they break, damage the walls, you know. But if we told those kids, hey, look, you got to act in this like you own it. And if you do, we'll pay a piece of our earnings into your student debt. We wouldn't have the student debt problem that we have today, but we don't teach people those behaviors.
Yeah.
And you have to have some skin in the game, and it has to be actionable. And that's why we're doing it this way, because we know most people that get into low to middle income housing, they never see that security deposit again. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, they get pounded on rent. They never get their security deposit. How do we help people get up the ladder, not push them down the ladder? That's the idea behind these vehicles.
Yeah. The money is generally going in one direction. So, you know, that's the way to change it. That's really exciting. I would certainly like to hear more about that as that comes together. And maybe we could talk more about it offline, or, you know, give us some ideas to how people can get access to that. Maybe if you can put it in the chat or get it to me after the fact, I would appreciate that. And then as regards changing habits, Malik, you were going to talk about Klondike and how it's
looking at that as well. And I think this is a great, great segue. And I think, Ted, and you guys hit the nail on the head. For us, what we're trying to do is we're trying to provide information, and then we're trying to do the most important thing that most people drop the ball on when it comes to comprehensive financial planning, and that's evaluate, that's taking action, implementing the plan, implementing the action, evaluating and adjusting. Right. So those are the things that people, most individuals, they get that data. They want the data. They want the information. They get that information, and we don't act on it, and we don't change on it. So with Klondike, we're going to have rewards. We're going to have incentives for them to accomplish their goals when they accomplish it. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be incentivizing them to act on the plan, because mm-hmm. that's where the ball is dropped. But that's where most people tend to dismiss. They go to planners. Traditionally, you go to a planner, you get this 100, 200 page document,
Facebook,
with all these recommendations, everything inside of it. And then you prop it up on the table is what my first boss used to say. It's going to be used to prop up a table. And so what we want to do is we want to be able to give you that information. Mm-hmm. And then as things change, right, we had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2018. We had the Secure Act 1.0 in 2019, and then 2.0 here that came out recently, the Consolidation Act. All these things are changing. When Secure Act first passed, that was the biggest change in retirement since 2006, right? When the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, that's the biggest legislation change in taxes since the 1980s. So when things like this change and it happens, what are we doing about it? How are we evaluating our finances? How are you going to get empowered to change it? So unless you're working with one of our firms, you're not going to have that access. These other apps, these other web pages, they're not giving you that data. They're not giving you those incentives, those mm-hmm. nudges, everything altogether is just not happening. So with us, to answer your question directly, Joel, like that Excel spreadsheet, yes, that's cool, but we need the nudges. We need the incentives. Yeah. It's a behavior thing. And Ted can probably-
Behavior has to change, which is what you're talking about.
Yes. You know, and mm-hmm. our industry, it moved from the boiler room, right? You know, ABC always be closing to fiduciary to now it's okay. What are your past behaviors? What are your biases? You know, what are those things that are making you not want to save? You know, so why do you want that nice car or that nice bag over a comfortable retirement? Right. Why do you have to have that big home? Why can't you just live in one of the homes of like Roots Prepared, right? So for example, so like, you know, what are those questions? What's happening? Did you have these conversations in your home, you know, over the dinner table when you were a teenager, right? So we want to get to those other aspects of it. Klondike is also going to be touching on the behavior aspect of things because that's important to me. That's important to our founders as well too, because that's what we think finances, we've learned this over the years now, but that's what I think finances is going to be 20 years down the line. We're probably going to be sitting on the couch somewhere mm-hmm. and talking more about the soft skills and things of that nature of finance.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, Joe, what's not intuitive here to a lot of people is that, you know, 44% of all Americans right now have a side hustle, right? So basically almost one out of two people. But if you're at home right now and you're thinking, I got to earn an extra $6,000, an extra $10,000, an extra $15,000. There's still a lot of people that don't have the education to know how. What platform should I be on? How do I sell either a skill or a little product that I make? And it seemed like it would be easy, but in this gig economy, it is easy once you understand how to do it. Mm-hmm. And then once they do it, most people don't realize, oh gosh, I might owe the IRS taxes on this. I didn't realize I'm going to get taxed on this. I thought I just, you know, I sold some candles out of my house. It's my money, you know, and that is going to be increasingly important because we believe over time, people won't just have one income. They'll have multiple streams of income, which, you know, people should have anyway. Some active, some passive, mm-hmm. and getting people educated that if you figure out how to drive your income, and like Malik was mentioning, if you manage those behaviors to manage your expenses, that increases your cash flow, and that cash flow drives your net worth. And these are the kinds of things we really can make a difference in our city in a big way.
Yeah. And you're actually running a little ahead of me because that's exactly the direction I wanted to go in next. Let me do this because we're just about halfway through. So you guys, if you have questions, you can put those in the chat or raise your virtual hand and we'll start taking those at this time. But before we jump into that, let's talk about that because there's a school of thought in America that you have to save, you know, what's your number, right? That was always said. You got to save $10 million or whatever that number is. And then you can just live off of that for the rest of your life. But there's another school of thought where if you know how to manage cash flow and generate cash flow, whether it's passive or active, then even if you don't have the massive savings, you could still be okay. What's really the difference in those two that you think people need to understand and appreciate, especially when you talk about, you know, advancing your net worth and moving up the ladder and moving out of poverty?
So that is a great question, Joel. And part of Klondike, one of the things that we're going to be doing differently is one of the things that drives me crazy about investments and how you build portfolios is asking 5-10 questions and then putting you inside of an asset allocation, right? Mm-hmm. That's needed. That's needed, you know, because if a client only wants to divulge a certain amount of information, that's fine. But to me, I think you need to look at two things. You need to look at risk behaviors, risk preferences. That's that. How do you feel? How do you behave with the market? But a lot of things that people don't look at, that's risk capacity. And then that's the cash flow. You might be able to want to go out there and flip homes and sell and flip homes, but do you have the cash flow that if you flip that one home and you lose all your money in it, will you still be able to pay your bills?
Right.
If the answer to that question is no, then you don't have the risk capacity to do flipping, even though you might have the risk tolerance to do
it. Mm-hmm.
Right. So one thing that we're going to be teaching individuals is looking at it from both sides, building portfolios from both sides. Right. So this is what your risk tolerance looks like. Now, if you build a portfolio based on your cash flow needs and what you need to pull from it, this is what that allocation will look like. So I think that's how we would like to address it from Klondike.
Yeah, very good point. And Ted, even yourself, I mean, to the point of, you know, at one point, like you said, you were just working this high paying job, coming home, cashing the paycheck, everything was fine. You know, you could save that money up and then retire. But you decided to leave that and go into a different model where now you're dealing with cash flow and everything else. How has that really benefited you
in
understanding cash flow over just savings?
So, you know, it's like you can either get up every morning and work hard for your money, or you can figure out how to get your money to work hard for you.
And there you go.
a lot of people haven't been educated, as you know, in things like real estate and other things that can provide you with passive income. So as I mentioned in the beginning, you know, these two real ways to build your real net worth, the stock market's important, but the real net worth is built in real estate and business ownership, whether you're passive or active, to have those streams of income come in. And so over time, you know, what you want to be thinking about is how do I get my dollars to work where they can provide me what would recreate my paycheck, if you will. Right. And that doesn't always mean that you've got a giant lump sum of money in the bank. You know, I could own 15 real estate properties and I don't have a lot of money in the bank, but it's generating me as much income as I had when I'm working right now. And so there are a number of angles of the axe, but I think people should be looking at all those to figure out how to do it. Because in the end, you don't live off of a lump sum of money. You live off of a stream of income. And so one way or the other, you have to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, I bring that up because it's a very, very important point. You look at a lot of people that are, you know, lower income families, and the idea of, I'll never get to that number. I'm never going to save $1 million. I'm never going to get there. So what's the point, right? And not understanding cash flow, they just give up, you know? And so what happens a lot of times, and this has kind of been just something that has irritated me for many, many years, is you'll see oftentimes in these poor neighborhoods, the fanciest cars. You'll see cars more expensive than the homes that they're sitting in front of, right? You know, but they don't understand appreciating and depreciating assets. And so because of that, they wind up buying a lot of depreciating assets, which might be, you know, sneakers and, you know, fancy cars and Gucci this, Gucci that. No offense to Gucci, you know, but it's not building toward the cash flow. So, you know, it's definitely a need to change that mindset. Go ahead.
And Joe, you know, people need to think that, you know, when you think about business ownership, like I'm in the concrete business now, we pour driveways. I want to raise my hand and admit here on this podcast, I know absolutely nothing about pouring concrete. I really, to this day, I mean, I can spell rebar and things like that. I don't know how to pour it, but I had skills in marketing, Joel. And so I found a local guy who was really good at pouring concrete. I asked him to give me some of his company and I would do the marketing for the company. And now the company has tripled in size. Consequently, I'm getting passive cash flow from that company for trading off my skills of what I bring to the company. Everybody on here has a set of unique skills. And we only sometimes think about that in terms of our job or what we do day to day. But you may look at other businesses that are out there that you say to yourself, wow, they seem like it's a decent business, but I could add this skill in here. And you'd be surprised sometimes that you can trade your skill for equity. And that not only creates some passive income, but if the company sells down the road, you got the opportunity to get a lump sum. And it's just not, we haven't been trained as human beings to think that way. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, if you just take that one piece of advice and walk away from the podcast, you're going to find an opportunity in the next 12 months where it's like, I didn't even think that existed, but it does.
Yeah. No, that's actually a huge point. And the reason why is because a lot of times the school systems don't talk about that. You know, I think my son was asking me the other day, he said, have you ever used quantum physics after you got out of school or whatever it was? And I was like, no, right? But the things that you really need on a day-to-day basis, like you're talking about, is intangible. I mean, imagine how much could you accomplish if you were to trade your sweat equity skill set for something else in another company where they need that. That's a huge point. So, you know, it's thinking outside the box and getting creative with things that can really take you to the next level. So, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that, Ted. That's a very valuable point. Anything you would like to add about appreciating and depreciating assets as it relates to building cash flow? Because that's certainly a problem that we see a lot of in the minority communities. Anything else to add to that? At all? Malik, you haven't said much about that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ted.
Yeah, I just say that, you know, I mean, you know the real estate business, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I can't remember, somebody said something like, you know, you want to buy land because they aren't making any more of it. And, you know, the whole thing of it is when you own dirt, if you have time, that dirt's never going to go bad. You know, you just look where the dirt is. And if you have time to sit on it or hold that real estate, I mean, every large industrialized nation, really to somewhat besides the United States, they talk about the property ladder. It's the way that intergenerational wealth is built in a lot of countries, that people own real estate on the property ladder and they hand it down to our kids. And we never really talked about it that way here in America. People talk about buying a home, but that's different than thinking about the property ladder. And, yeah. and I think our country is going to move that way over time. And if you just realize it's in front of you, but the quicker you can get some real estate in your portfolio, I think the better off you are.
Yes, yes. You know, and I absolutely agree. We just finished building out our models at Klondike, and our alternative investments, they have a real estate sleeve in it, because we're very big on real estate as well too. But I want to kind of take it back to the basics when it comes to, you know, appreciating and depreciating assets. As a millennial, I'm the grandfather of millennial, because I'm year 81. That's what I like to say. Okay. So I used to argue with a lot of my counterparts who, at the time, this is where the noise was coming out that, hey, I'd rather rent than own a home. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'm not sure if you guys remember that.
I remember.
5-7 years ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe even longer. And I told everyone that was saying that they were absolutely crazy. And now we're starting to see some of the reports, some of the findings, how corporations are owning a larger share of the single family residents and things of that nature than they did years past. And it's becoming that much harder now with higher rates and the homes appreciating and things of that nature. So, but there's one thing that I always tell people: if you want to have a successful retirement, you want to own your home, right? You want to own that home going into retirement. It's just improve your chances of a successful retirement. Even if you take, you know, you're not a big real estate investor, if you want to just keep things simple and say, hey, should I own a home? What should I do? You know, I'm definitely in big favor, especially in the minority community, of owning your home. Where one thing that was pretty interesting, most cases when we talk about depreciating assets, we throw cars in there, right? Which we haven't seen in the last couple of years. We've seen cars appreciate last couple of years, right? I had a client that bought the Porsche electrical car for like 85-90,000, and now when she looks at it, it's well over six figures now that she can sell it for, right? So I think things are people are really starting to see that when you hold some hard assets, when you, especially some dirt, as we've been talking about here, that you do better off in the long run, especially when you're building that net worth.
Yeah. Let me ask this real quick and kind of off subject. Well, not off subject, but do you think that's an anomaly, the fact of the cars appreciating? Because historically, mm-hmm. it's just kind of really been the other way around.
You know, Ted is better at predicting the future than I am, but I kind of gave up on it. So what I tell clients we're not going to depend on it. We're not going to put that extra value inside of our plan. Right. So we're not going to write it home, if you will. Yeah. So that's what I tell individuals. I personally, if I can take a stab at it, I would probably say it'll get back to normal. That's me. At the end of the day, I tell people, that same client said, hey, Malik, should I sell it? Should I sell mm-hmm. this car that's now worth $135? I said, sure. But, you know, do you want to buy another? electrical Porsche after you sell it. You're going right. to go back to a Camry so you can appreciate the, you know, the surplus that you just
made. The beta there.
So there's a few things you got to take into consideration, Ted.
Yeah, I'd say, Joel, look, I mean, I think we had what is easily once in a century, but it could be once in a quarter century situation happen with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic caused some tremors that we may not see for a long time. And a lot of those cars went up in value because the supply chain completely got shut off.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously a lot of our driving patterns have changed, but these things are returning to norms right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of the car dealerships made pile loads of money, but they're coming back to life right now. When you're paying above MSRP and crazy stuff like that, it's not going to last. In general, cars have and always will be a depreciating asset. If you enjoy the car, great. If you're thinking about that car is going to help support your retirement, bad idea.
Yeah, forget about it.
Because that's simple. You know, unless you can figure out how to use it and hook up in a relationship and get some money that way. I don't know. Yeah. it ain't going to happen because the car is going to double in value.
Right. Yeah. No. You said it. So, you know, one other thing I just want to mention as well. Well, a couple of different things. We talk about real estate and putting those as part of your portfolio. We certainly all agree with that. The other thing that I think a lot of people need to understand is real estate ownership doesn't have to mean phone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning because the toilet's stuffed up, right? I mean, there's many ways you can invest in real estate without having to either physically own the property, as in a, you know, single family owner with an investment property, a sole asset. You can invest many other types of ways through REITs and other things. So you guys want to talk about that a little bit just to
I'd only add my local perspective on REITs is a good example. It's a REIT, if you will, but it's all local here in Atlanta. You could touch and see the properties if you want to, but there's nothing actively for you to do. Right. And while most REITs require you to be an accredited investor where you've got to have $1 million net worth or et cetera, this is non-accredited, meaning you can invest $100 and you're going to basically make money in two ways. One, you're going to get a dividend based upon how the properties do. Let's just say the dividend is 6%. And then if the properties appreciate in value, which they're all over the place here in Atlanta, and they probably will, that's how you could make a 10% return on your money. But unlike most REITs, ours has liquidity after 1 year, right? Meaning you don't have to be stuck in it for 10 years or 15 years, or, you know, we don't charge any fees. We don't have any general partnership fees or anything like that. And so, you know, I think that's probably the easiest way to get invested is either buy a publicly traded REIT. Probably one of the biggest ticker symbols is the ticker symbol O. But, you know, we're doing it locally in here. And if you care about helping people figure out how to get, you know, up the ladder, it's you kind of do something socially good for our city. And at the same token, you can make money as an investor.
Yeah. Very, very good. Let's talk briefly about IRAs and 401ks. There's a lot of talk, obviously, out there about people moving money out of those in the self-directed IRAs and other things. What feedback do you have for people in that regard? Self-directed retirement accounts. Any thoughts?
So self-directed IRAs, and this is where I'm a little bit more conservative with my clients with their retirement plan. When they come to us about self-directed IRAs, I like to make sure that they have some type of real estate experience, you know, if they're going to kind of risk their retirement from that aspect or lock it up. From that aspect, mm-hmm. and with when it comes to buying hard assets inside of their IRA, so that's kind of the stand that I've always kind of, or the approach that I've always taken when it comes to that, and then also too, one of the things that I like to tell people, to me, for you to get to a self-directed IRA, there's a lot of other boxes you want to check. One of the things about real estate is that sometimes, to the point that Ted mentioned, is that with his particular program, you have a 1 year hold where most REITs are seven to 10 and things of that nature. So liquidity can be an issue, right? And if a $200 billion bank can have a liquidity issue, so can we, right? So what I tell folks is that if you are using that IRA money to get into real estate, to do real estate investing, that kind of tells me two things, right? If you've never did real estate investing before, that you may not be great at budgeting, right? Because you didn't have the, you couldn't save the money up to do what you needed to do. So now we're jumping into retirement. So I kind of always have a few check boxes for clients. I like to see them be able to amass that cash, to grow that cash, to be able to put into the real estate venture, because I already know that you might not be able to sell it. Prices might be down. You might not be able to refinance it. Interest rates might be up, right? And you may need that cash. So I'm a little bit more conservative from that standpoint. Okay. We do recommend it, but it, to us, it's kind of like, hey, this is the last resort. And I like for people to have experience. I'm curious to hear what Ted has to say.
I think for people that believe that you have the time and energy and some skill in real estate, they can be very productive. You know, one question you might want to ask yourself being on this podcast today is that if I had $500,000, if I had $100,000 today, what do I believe would do better over the next 5 years? If I bought a house in a place like Pittsburgh here in Atlanta, or do I think I'd be better off being in the S&P 500? I don't know the answer, Joel, about which one will do better. But I think if you're the kind of person that says, I like the idea of owning a home in Pittsburgh, I can see it, I can rent it, it's in front of me, it can be a very, very powerful vehicle, right? Because mm-hmm. you control where your investments are going. The buyer beware piece of this is that most people need to realize it's very difficult to collateralize with those assets, meaning that you're not going to be able to take a loan in general. And if you do, you have something called the UBIT or the unrelated business income tax. That can be a problem. And two, it can't be your primary residence, right? Or you get a problem with the IRS potentially. But listen, for people that like real estate and it makes sense to them, and I've known some investors like Malik that they could care less about the stock market. They like everything in real estate. It can be a very powerful vehicle, especially Joel today with Roth IRAs, because you may never, ever, ever get taxed on all that money again, even when you sell the properties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good points. Good points. So appreciate that. It's a good addition to the show here today. You know, one thing I wanted to mention also as we kind of wrap up here, you know, I've often said this in financial literacy seminars and things that I've taught over the years going way back, you know, not at you guys level, but at any level or at any point. But the point is that the majority of people, the way they can actually get, the way they generally get two bumps in income or revenue, I should say, in life is insurance and real estate. Somebody sells a property, they get a lump sum of cash. Somebody dies, they get a lump sum of cash. And, you know, do you still feel that that's foundational to building a good financial future from that standpoint? We talked about real estate a lot. What do you think about insurance as it relates to that as well? Just from a family bank standpoint.
Yeah, so I think insurance is very important. To me, insurance can... And as a fiduciary, we use this word. We're very careful with this word, but guarantee a legacy, or guarantee that, you know, you're going to leave a legacy to your loved ones. Mm-hmm. And I like to, and to me, it's exactly what it is. It's an insurance policy so that you can ensure that your family is taken care of. Because that's the grassroots of insurance. It wasn't to get fancy with a lot of the other things that we do nowadays, what it kind of turned into. It was back in the 1800s when the working spouse passed away, that family had money so that they can live on, because the other spouse typically wasn't working at the time, mm-hmm. right? So that's the foundation of insurance. So I think that to build, and then when it comes to real estate, go on the home, it goes back to what I said initially. The statistics tell you that if you have a home paid off in retirement, your chances of success are higher. That's number one. Number two, you're able to budget better because you're the only thing really increasing without refinancing, all that good stuff like that, is the taxes and the homeowner's insurance on that home, right? So you're able to better manage, to better plan out, to better forecast out what your expenses are going to be, what they are. So I think those are great foundational pieces from that standpoint. I still believe that.
Yeah. I would just add, Joel, that mm-hmm. a lot of people have salespeople that try to sell them cash value life insurance. Mm-hmm. And if you understand real estate, I'll make it simple. You can understand cash value life insurance. When you buy a property and you take out a mortgage, in the early years of the mortgage, it's almost all interest and no principal. The longer you live in the property, the less interest there is, the more principal there is. Cash value life insurance works the same way. If you put money into these policies, the first 5 or 10 years absolutely suck. You're basically paying most of your fees to the insurance company, and you're not, frankly, building up tons of equity. Right. But if you hold the insurance policy for 20 or 30 years, they can be powerful tools to saving money and get money out in tax-free for retirement. But make no mistake, they do not work if you don't have at least 10 years to live in the property. They just do not work.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a great point, Ted. And I will add this, especially in my community, when you use the insurance, use it for solve one problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have an insurance that's trying to solve eight things, oh, my kid can go to school with this, I can retire with this, I can build a legacy with this, and when you I could borrow from it from a business, you cannot do all of those things with that policy. It's either going to change your payment, it's either going to lower your death benefit. It's going to do something to the policy, right?
Yeah.
So if you're using insurance, try to use it for one thing. If you're going to use it as an investment, try to use it as an investment. And that's it. That's what you're building it for. That's what you're using it for. If you're using it to pass along wealth, you could use it for that. But when you start to use it for 2 to 3 uses, it typically doesn't work out that way.
Yeah. I wanted to bring that up because a lot of times, you know, we're talking about a lot of the reasons why the minority communities are disadvantaged. And it just pains me every time you hear somebody's died and we got to have a GoFundMe page set up and we got to do this and we got to do that. I mean, there's so many ways to avoid that early on so that we don't have that situation. So I wanted to, you know, at least bring that up on the table during our discussion here. So I appreciate that. Lastly, one thing I want to circle back to, Ted, we talked about this before in some earlier conversations that we had. What you're providing as a private CFO services, I think that's a very, very powerful thing. And I want to spend a quick, brief second talking about that, if you can kind of elaborate on what you're doing in that regard.
Well, I think this is what we pulled into the Klondike model now, which is that most people, to a degree, they don't really think about themselves as the CEO of their family finances. It's why we use the term private CFO. It's what we're modeling into a software like Klondike, is that a lot of people don't go home every night and say, hey, let's talk about our 401k. You know, people don't have those conversations at home, but the real conversation, should we buy or lease a car? Does it make sense for us to refinance our mortgage? What's a better way that we can save money in Amazon? You know, these are the questions that folks ask. So who do you turn to ask these questions? Well, you may not want to ask your brother or sister or your parents, or if you're older, you don't want to ask your kids. And that's why we designed this private CFO, is so you had somebody who is completely focused on helping you figure out how to increase your income, how to basically save more money on your expenses so you could get a fatter wallet and then build a bigger net worth. And that model has been there for a long time. The question that Malik and I had is like, how do we take this model at a cost affordable price to the masses? And that's what we're going to do in Klondike, because what we do personally, we had to figure out a way to scale it. But I really believe everybody needs a good CFO by their side. It's just so much is coming at people, Joe, with the internet and in social media and in regular media. Sometimes you can't make heads or tails on how to get a deal at Chick-fil-A, let alone, you know, anywhere else. And we want to be able to help people answer. And look, you know, when people have kids, they ask questions like, should I give my kid an allowance or not? And what app should they use? And should I do one of these 529 plans or not? And, you know, should I send them to an in-state school or an out-of-state school? I mean, these are the real family questions that people ask. They're not at home going, should I stay in that Target fund in my 401k? Yeah. Said nobody ever, Joel. Nobody ever said that. You know, they don't talk about that stuff at home.
Yeah. No, very, very good points. You know, and the idea, you know, because again, you're talking about bridging the gap between, you know, the lower income side of the city with the upper income side, and how do we do that? And, you know, some of the things we've talked about today, private CFOs and managing money and cash flow, is just an abstract world. But if you could put it in a package to where somebody can afford $10, maybe you don't go to Burger King or McDonald's today, and you put that into paying for your subscription for Klondike. I mean, how much more value would you get out of it than just eating a burger and being hungry again in a couple hours? It's a no-brainer. You know?
It's big, Joe. I mean, I don't think Malik or I are going to fix the MARTA system, right? You know, that's probably not going to happen. But, you know, honestly, if all the high-paying jobs are in Fulton County and Alpharetta and you live in Clayton County and you can't even get there, how are you going to be able to make more money, right? Yeah. So we got to be able to figure out other ways to help the disadvantaged people in this city figure out how we can get them upwardly mobile with their finances, right? Or we all have a problem in the long term. And this is something we need to be focused a lot more on as a city. And I think Malik and I are going to make a big difference in that.
Yeah. No, it's really exciting. I mean, no city really thrives without a middle class. And the more people you can push up into that, the better everybody is. So very, very good point. So guys, I really appreciate it. It's been a great show. A lot of good points here that were brought out. Any concluding comments, you know, as we wrap up for the day? Malik, I'll let you go first. Any concluding comments?
Yes. Just want to say, you know, be on the lookout for Klondike. We're putting the finishing touches on the app. We expect to be launching in a couple of months. I think it probably will be soft launch, probably full launch, probably the third or fourth quarter of this year. But we're definitely excited. And then once we launch, we have more ideas right now than probably the size of our pocketbook, if you will. So we're going to have multiple variations of this because we are. And I think Ted said it great, and I don't want people to gloss over, is that we're taking some of our best things from our practices and we're pumping it into this app. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're trying to duplicate that, if you will. So definitely be on the lookout. I put the website in the chat. So check it out. Check out the website and learn more as well too.
Sounds good. I actually would love to be one of your beta testers. So when you guys have that ready.
Absolutely.
You
know, that'd be great. Great.
We'd love that. Ted, take us home. What final comments you have?
I just want to say thanks for having Malik and I on the podcast today. Thanks for giving us this platform to just talk about these important things in general. We got such a great city here in Atlanta. I think we can prove to the country that we can figure out how to close this disparity and wealth gap in general. But it's important that we've got better education. It's important that we've got better access. And I think through tools like Klondike and what we put together with Roots that I put in here, we can make a social impact in our city in a big way. And also remind people that capitalism is okay. You can do both of these things at the same time. I get up every day thinking about it right now.
Fantastic. Well, it's great to hear. I'm glad we got a chance to get back together, Ted and Malik. Pleasure meeting you. And I'm sure we'll be talking a lot more going forward. This is all very exciting. I even learned some information today, which is great. You know, you guys got a great mind for finance, which is fantastic. And marrying the two with real estate and everything else, I think is beautiful. And thank you so much for what you're doing to contribute toward Atlanta and its growth, reducing the wage disparity or the income gap in the country, or at least in Atlanta. So thank you again. And for all you guys listening, this has been the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. We're very excited to have you here with us today and look forward to seeing you guys again. Thank you very much. Thanks, Ted. Joel. Thanks, Malik.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Mornings with Joel CRE podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to write a brief review. And as always, continue to invite, share, and subscribe.